Quarterback back at the five, steps up, gets drilled. Yes, sir, he gets mashed. And that is going to be the ball game. 6-5-4-3. They can't snap it. They can't stop it. They can't win it. Alabama wins the ball game.
Gary Thomas, linebacker, Alabama.
He was a nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs, have some fun.
Woo! Son, I got to do better than this.
Lights out.
Attacking the cornerback is just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all the offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football! Let's play some football!
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season. And they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Good morning and welcome into Off the Edge right here on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. Joe Gaither hanging out with Mason Woods for just a little bit of time. Jacob Harrison, take a little sick day today. He'll be back with you in the very near future as soon as he gets a little on the mend. So we look forward to getting him back in action. We're going to talk about the weekend that was, and what a weekend it was. Alabama coming through on the baseball diamond, winning 2 out of 3 against the number 5 team in the nation. Arkansas qualifying officially for Hoover as they will play actually the opening game tomorrow morning of the SEC baseball tournament at 9:30. Oh, gosh, Mason, we got to talk about tomorrow morning's coverage. We might be off tomorrow. That just hit me. That's all. That's going to be a very interesting thing because we're going to be obviously covering Alabama baseball. I'll be up in Hoover. Looking forward to that. Alabama softball being eliminated for the first time ever in regional play. Gave all the effort they could on Sunday, but just could not get the bats going. A theme for the season reared its ugly head on Sunday, actually on Saturday, and then on Sunday. On Saturday in the first game with Stanford, and Sunday in the third game with Stanford. Just could not really get the offense going. But kudos and congratulations to the Alabama softball team going, 42-12. What a season it was for Patrick Murphy and them girls. Want to give a big shout out to Kaylee Tao, her excellent college softball career with Alabama softball. Big thanks to her as well. And then Alabama golf. Let's celebrate. Justin Thomas wins his second PGA championship, the second major for Justin Thomas. And if you were watching the golf on Sunday instead of the softball, you saw some miraculous golf shots from Justin Thomas, some shots that I hit only in my dreams. The playoff hole, the second playoff hole, finding the green from the tee. Mason, you ever driven the green on a par four? It's pretty tough. I don't know. I've never done that before. Maybe one day in my life we'll get there. But Justin Thomas finding the green, taking control of the playoff, and then ultimately making par on the third playoff hole to complete his comeback, the third largest comeback in major history. And I think it's the biggest comeback since 1999 in one of golf's four majors, on coming back from seven stroke deficit entering Sunday's round. The lead did get up to eight strokes thanks to Mito Pereira. But man, you want to talk about some bad fate for Mito Pereira? Up one stroke on the 18th hole, double bogeys. He finds the creek off the tee and double bogeys, and cost himself $1.8 million with that hole.
How much did he still win, though?
$850,000. I mean, great job. I will take that in my paycheck all day long. Sign me up. I'm going to retirement with $850,000. I mean, obviously, you get taxes taken out of that sort of thing. So you'd probably make it somewhere around $500,000, $400,000, that range.
But you can live a pretty comfortable life.
Amen. That'll set me up for maybe 20 years, 30 years. I'd be good on that. I live a very simple lifestyle. So $400,000 would be just fine to take care of my lifestyle for a long time. But kudos and congratulations to Justin Thomas, $2.7 million by just persevering, staying the course. He started finding some birdies on the back end of his round on Sunday. Mito Pereira and company were leaking oil. And Justin Thomas, I mean, actually the veteran of that crew, Will Zalatoris, Mito Pereira, kind of the younger guys, kind of lesser experienced guys, Justin Thomas becomes just the second player to win two PGA championships under the age of 30. And now he has 15 career tour victories since 2005, which is the most of anybody other than Dustin Johnson. He and Dustin Johnson tied with 15 tour victories in the last, 7 years. Justin Thomas vaulting up to number five in the world. And man, When he won PGA Championship in 2017, everybody thought, "Oh man, this guy's going to go on a massive run." He has kind of been Tiger Woods' little understudy. This guy's going to go challenge Tiger Woods, challenge Jack Nicklaus at such a young age. Go start winning a lot of majors. It took him 3 or 5 years to win his next major. But Justin Thomas, a two-time major winner from the University of Alabama, part of the 2013 national championship winning team over here with the Crimson Tide. Looking forward to seeing what he does in a month up in Massachusetts at the U.S. Open. Let me tell you, I'm a mild golf fan, but 4 weekends a year, really three, but 4 weekends a year I'm watching golf. The Masters, U.S. Open, PGA Championship, and the British Open. The 4 weekends a year. So JT, congratulations. Thank you for making my weekend golf experience that much more fun as Tiger Woods withdrew from his Sunday round after a very difficult Saturday round. So Justin Thomas, major congratulations to you. We're going to play because of all the drama that transpired last week between Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Deion Sanders, and everybody else who kind of got stuck their nose in and got involved. Greg Sankey, the Miami billionaire. Lots of people getting their nose in there and getting their 2 cents off. But because of the NIL discussion that really took off last week, we're going to close the show with an interview from Luke Fedlum. Jacob Harrison talked to Luke Fedlum, an NIL expert, I believe he's a lawyer who is certified as an agent. So he's going to talk about his experience with NIL so far. But we had a lot of continually breaking news around the Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher stuff. Greg Sankey's kind of seemingly taking the side of Nick Saban, saying some of these NIL payments are out of control.
Speaking of Greg Sankey, did you see Greg Sankey tell Lane Kiffin he was not allowed to appear on the Dan Patrick Show?
I did, and that's another interesting aspect. He basically told him, don't go on that show because Lane Kiffin's a wild card. That's kind of going to be in 2 weeks' time when SEC spring meetings happen in Sandestin. I want to know, Mason, I was playing this game on Friday with you. What would Lane Kiffin and Kirby Smart be doing to instigate during those meetings? Will they play nice? Will they play nicely under Principal Greg Sankey? Or will they end up trying to stoke the fires and continue the drama between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban? I think it's going to be very fun to watch. I'm looking forward to that. I'm trying to get corporate to sponsor us a bug so we can get into the room and just drop a bug under the table. Nobody will see it. We'll just record the whole thing. I bet you there's going to be some nasty language that happens during that meeting. I'm looking forward to kind of hearing some of the scuttlebutt. But I want to start with the Miami billionaire. I'd like to start with, oh my goodness, it would have been a great job if I looked up his name prior to this. But I read an article from the Miami Herald. I read an article in the Miami Herald with Barry Jackson. Thank you. Barry Jackson for the Miami Herald. It was on the tip of my tongue. Where the Miami billionaire talked about how he just wants to get involved. He classified it. It's not pay for play. Remember, guys, it's not pay for play. It's pay for work. He said, everybody who has an NIL deal with me and my companies has a work requirement. They have to shoot film on Fridays. They have to shoot commercial on Fridays. They've got to do certain social media obligations. I believe one of his companies is a cigarette company, an electronic cigarette company. He's got two companies that he's using these athletes for, and he basically just wants to give back to the athletes and use the athletes as marketeers for his business. He, you know, of course, it's not pay for play. It can't be pay for play. It's pay for work is what he's saying. And if you are listening to the Aggie faithful, they're saying, "Oh, they're not getting any money before they get to campus. They're not paying for play. They're not paying for commitments. They're just paying them to work once they get here." And to that, I say, good for Miami and good for Texas A&M. And where is Alabama, you know, finding? I mean, essentially, this is a loophole. Essentially, these colleges have found a loophole in the system. They're marketing their business leaders as NIL opportunities. Where are the University of Alabama business leaders doing the same thing for our athletes? We've seen Montana Fouts with her clothing line. We've seen, you know, different various athletes. We remember Jameson Williams last year with his Bose headphones, and we know Bryce Young with his crypto deal and podcast deal with Colin Cowherd. Like, great job for them. Those athletes did the work and found those deals. Malachi Moore with Milo Sweet Tea. And that's all well and good. And that is, let's be honest, the truest intent of name, image, and likeness. But the loophole that Nick Saban in Alabama needs to start exploiting, because it's not going away. Let me tell you, the NCAA and their regulations that they put in 2 weeks ago are a farce. They're not going to do anything. There's not going to be any sort of regulation to this until Greg Sankey issues some sort of a conference-wide policy. But the problem is, you don't want to issue a conference-wide policy and hem in your 14-member schools, soon to be 16-member schools, while the other rest of the country is free reign, can kind of do what they want to do and operate in these loopholes. So the NCAA, the powerless institution that it is, I mean, What are you really doing here? It's not, these loopholes are not going away. Let me just tell you. So Nick Saban last week calling for reform, calling for regulations. They're not going away. What Nick Saban really was doing was hand out, guys, y'all got to step it up. We got to step it up. You want to come in and compete with A&M? You want to compete with Miami? You want to compete with some of these schools like USC? $3.5 million for Jordan Addison? We got to step it up. Nick Saban, we finished number two in recruiting last year. He don't like that. He don't like that too much. He wants to finish number one. He don't want to lose to Texas A&M, and he knows that money is a big factor now.
Shouldn't other schools be concerned that Alabama's still finishing second in recruiting, even though they're not doing that?
100%, exactly. That's exactly right. So let's say Alabama doesn't really step into this game. We're not gonna fall off. Alabama will still have elite recruiting classes. The facilities that are on campus at the Capstone, the ability to say $1.7 billion earned in the NFL, the track record of success. You know, you want to talk about championships that don't really matter to these high school kids. But, some of them care about it. Some of them certainly do. And Nick Saban and Alabama still has several resources to use to attract these kids. So, okay, we may not get all 10 5-stars that Nick Saban wants. Maybe two or three goes to A&M. I know they got 7 last year, but let's just be honest. That's excitement. That's excitement and over-exuberance. A&M won't be able to keep that up, especially when Jimbo Fisher goes 8-4 and 9-3 and 10-2. Like, they will not continue to invest at this level for mediocrity. So it's just a matter of patience for the Alabama Crimson Tide faithful, because Alabama will still be reeling in top-end recruiting classes left and right as long as Coach Saban is here, as long as Coach Saban wants to play this game and continue to build his legacy, the Tide will still be rolling. They might just lose a recruit to here or there to different schools. Now, my biggest concern, Mason, is not Texas A&M, honestly. It's the University of Miami. All the receiver talent that Alabama has taken out of South Florida over the last 15 years, Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, Calvin Ridley, all out of the South Florida area. What happens if the University of Miami keeps those guys? We remember what happens in the late 80s, the early 90s. Ooh, what happens if Mario Cristobal puts a wall around the city? Mark Richt wanted to do that but was unsuccessful. Mark Richt did invest in the program by helping them build kind of a big old practice facility and getting them up to modern times. What happens? That's the program I'm really concerned about, because that's such a hotbed of talent. If they keep those guys, Alabama might not like that too much. You got the South Florida area, Antonio Brown, lots of great players coming out of the South Florida area. So we'll hear from Luke Fedlum in just a little bit. Before we do that, I want to touch on one other local story that happened over the weekend. Our man Tim Anderson, local kid out of Hillcrest High School. I know he didn't go to the University of Alabama, but born and bred right here in Tuscaloosa, caught up in some controversy over the weekend in New York with Josh Donaldson. Now the White Sox are, 21-20? They're having a pretty good season so far. They're one of the better teams in Major League Baseball. Tim Anderson, probably one of the best players in Major League Baseball. I love watching him play. Ooh, we got to take a deep breath. That was a fun time. Tim Anderson basically was called Jackie by Josh Donaldson in reference to a comment that Tim Anderson made a couple of years earlier about how he felt like he was the modern-day Jackie Robinson. And there's a lot of truth to that. Tim Anderson pushing the boundaries, making sure that, you know, black culture is established in Major League Baseball, which honestly is getting kind of diluted by Hispanic culture over the last maybe 4 or 5 years. Tim Anderson really carrying the banner for the black player, because he won the Triple Crown, 2 years ago? Last year he was a batting champion. He's one of the best players in baseball, and he's got some swag that not a lot of people like. That's not old school baseball that not a lot of people can mess with. Poo-poo on you. Let's have some fun and watch Tim Anderson bat flip and get excited and be one of the best players in baseball. Well, very interesting, very fun over the weekend. Josh Donaldson owns up and says, yeah, I called him that. And he kind of referenced the reference and said, this is where I got it from. Tony La Russa, White Sox manager, saying, yeah, it was racist. Tim Anderson coming off the field and talking to the media very, very calmly said, yeah, it made me mad. It was out of line. It was inappropriate. Major applaud to Tim Anderson for the way he handles this with massive class. Just talks about it in the media, calm as can be. His heart rate probably wasn't above 70. He was fine. I mean, he expressed his opinion. That made me angry. That made me upset. But, you know, it just is what it is. We kept on playing the game. Well, the New York mob, basically, on Sunday night, chanting, Jackie, Jackie. Now, here's the thing. Josh Donaldson owns up to it and says, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Yankees organization owns up and says, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. But the fans, instead of saying, okay, maybe we were wrong, the fans lean into it because they're nasty New Yorkers leaning into it, going, Jackie, Jackie. While he's up to the plate on Sunday night, the White Sox are up 2-0 in a crucial moment. And what does Tim Anderson do? He says, see you later, 3-run home run. You guys can shut up. And really, Tim Anderson having the last laugh up in New York, winning the game 5-0. And kudos to you, Tim Anderson, handling yourself with pure class, handling yourself as a great player, honestly, one of the best players in baseball, and really just defending your honor, defending everything about yourself. I was really, really impressed with Tim Anderson over the weekend. Now, Alabama softball kind of, oh, thank you, Mason, putting in some news. Deebo Samuel skipping OTAs. Let me tell you, he's playing for the 49ers. It doesn't matter. They're not letting him go. He's going to play for the Niners.
But he unfollowed them on Instagram and Twitter, Joe.
It's the modern wide receiver way. It's the modern wide receiver way. But Debo, like, what compensation can you give the 49ers that's worth it? What Debo doesn't understand is that he also wants a contract extension. So what team, sorry for the big pivot here, but we're reacting to the news. What team wants to not only pay the 49ers a massive price, a first-round draft pick, third-round draft pick combined, you know, they're probably paying two or three draft picks to get Debo Samuel. So not only do you have to have the draft capital, but you also have to have the capital on the financial side of things. You have to have to pay him the big contract. We saw A.J. Brown with a $100 million contract. He wants to get paid like Stephon Diggs, A.J. Brown, some of these other wide receivers, Tyreek Hill, that got paid this offseason. And, you know, I can't blame him for that because your value is finite in the NFL. I think that's it's very, you know, I don't have any problem with him trying to earn his market value. The issue is he's just stuck in a situation that's not really going to be able to yield the results that he wants to. Debo Samuel really staring at a Le'Veon Bell situation where he's going to end up sitting out a whole year, destroying his own value and not really enjoying that. Now, Le'Veon Bell has said that he doesn't regret it that much, but he does. Let's be honest, he does. Debo Samuel, don't do that. You got to play. You got to go play for the 49ers, prove your value again, and see what kind of deal you can get on the open market.
I mean, I can't imagine that there'd be any player, after watching what happened to Le'Veon Bell, want to sit out for a season. Like you said, he says he doesn't regret it, but I disagree with that. I think there's no way that he does not regret that decision. He was at the top of the NFL, the top of his position. He was almost the top of two positions. I mean, he was one of the best receivers and the best running back in the NFL. And then he sits out for a year, and his career took a complete downturn for the rest of it. You look at where he is now, and it's pretty hard to say that was the right choice for him.
Yeah, and Debo Samuel feels the same way, as he was utilized as a running back and wide receiver last year, and was highly, highly effective and really one of the key members of the 49ers, getting him to deep into the playoffs. So, Debo, okay, you're skipping OTAs, but you better get your butt to camp when it's time to go to camp, and you better line up for the 49ers. Don't be missing paychecks because you're getting some bad advice, because at this point, no team is really going to be able to trade for you and give you the contract that you want to get. Maybe they do trade for you. Let's say that you get your way and they get traded out. It might take you a year to get paid on that new team because of the way the cap is structured, because of the way the money is played out in the NFL. We're going to make way for Luke Fedlam, NIL expert with Jacob Harrison here in just a minute. Jacob interviewed Luke Fedlam maybe a week or two. He's going to tell you all about NIL from the perspective of an agent, of a lawyer, of someone who's been dealing with both sides of things, college sports and the athlete. Man, this is not going away. Ryan Fowler is going to be back on the game today, and he and I were talking, discussing, like, this tree is going to bear fruit all summer long. You got the Miami billionaire's reaction, you have Greg Sankey's reaction, and like just when it may die down next week or so, SEC spring meetings are coming, and surely there's going to be some drama between them. Are they just going to have Nick and Jimbo separated on opposite sides of the room? Are they like, because Jimbo said, oh, I look forward to confrontation, I'm ready for it. I don't know. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see how SEC spring meetings play out. Coming up next, Luke Fedlam with Jacob Harrison on Off the Edge.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly cloudy this afternoon and tonight with scattered to numerous showers and thunderstorms around. The high today 80, tonight's low 64. Tomorrow and Wednesday, mostly cloudy both days with occasional showers and thunderstorms. Highs between 79 and 82. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You've probably seen their clothing around town on game days, but check out Christopher Mobley on the Strip. It's luxury game day apparel, redefined. It's the only place in town where you can find Todd Hoops Apparel, clothing designed for the modern day entrepreneur, golf enthusiast, and athleisure fanatic. They've got Peter Millar, Viore, Grayson, and Mizzen & Main. And if you haven't tried the Mizzen & Main dress shirts, you've got to. You can find them at 1410 University Boulevard on the Strip. Also, they've got a great e-commerce site at ChristopherMobley.shop. So check out Christopher Mobley, luxury game day apparel redefined.
You're listening to Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Love our music on here, but we also love supporting college athletes and their rights to make money for themselves. So let's continue the NIL conversation with an NIL expert, non-agent sports attorney, president of the Anomaly Sports Group, partner and chair of the sports law practice at Porter Wright Law Firm, at Luke Feldman on Twitter and Instagram accounts, Mr. Luke Feldman. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing incredible. My fan base might not, my listener base, I should say, is probably not too happy with me because we took this NIL conversation from words that the great Gene Stallings had yesterday at an event where he was kind of annoyed by the entire situation. But we have to step back and kind of look at it. But I want to ask you, how do you get into the NIL scape from where you were before it was approved as a non-agent sports attorney, counseling student athletes, professional athletes, retired athletes? And now how has kind of your job shifted within the past calendar year since this became available?
I'll tell you, this past year has been absolutely insane with all of the change that's come. I mean, when you think about it, NIL is one of the biggest changes to college sports as we've known it, right, in this generation. So for me, I've worked with professional athletes for the last 17, 18 years. And in working with athletes at the professional level, obviously they've been doing endorsement deals and marketing deals and, you know, being a brand ambassador for forever. And for me to be able to see that firsthand from a legal perspective at the pro level, then we knew that once name, image, and likeness became approved at the college level, that there were going to be some of the same challenges: understanding money, understanding the contracts, making sure that athletes are being protected and not taken advantage of. So it was an easy transition. It's just been incredibly busy.
And I'm sure it's something where you're constantly learning too, as the evolutionary landscape of the entire thing is on a continuous trajectory. There's no place to sit and be calm in the state of NIL. The wild, wild west, I think, is still just not an apt description of it because it doesn't completely do it justice. The wild west was a thing that existed for a long time without a lot of change. This is constantly, constantly changing. And one of the new things that Alabama has here with the Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa is a new NIL collective called High Tide Traditions. But before I ask you more specifically what collections are and how they work for the student athletes, Nick Saban said shortly after that was introduced that last year Alabama athletes made more in NIL than any other program in the country. And it's not hard to see why. I mean, Alabama is what it is. But if they're not using a collective and almost everybody else is, what are the different ways that athletes are using NIL to create revenue for themselves, if not through a collective in their university?
Absolutely. And when we talk about NIL collective, they are relatively new. So a year ago, that phrase, those two words weren't put together. No one knew what that was. It was created shortly after the football season started last fall. When we look at pre-kind of collectives, or even for student athletes that are in schools outside of collectives, one of the ways that they're really doing deals is through direct contact with business owners and brands. When name, image, and likeness was approved and became a legitimate opportunity for student athletes July 1st of last year, most student athletes opened up their direct messages, their social media, saying, "I'm open for business. Feel free to reach out to me." So that we already know that there are companies that establish relationships with athletes even before NIL, just through the school sponsorship, companies, brands that they work with, alumni of the university and institution. So we've seen that happen before. And so now with name, image, and likeness, we do have a lot of athletes who just have brands reaching out to them directly on social media. And there are opportunities for them to come up with deals that way. And then there are some athletes, especially as you would well know at the University of Alabama, that are that elite of an athlete that they're able to engage with a marketing agent who's out there finding them deals and finding them opportunities. So those are just a couple of the ways beyond just NIL collective that student athletes are doing deals.
Yeah, and I reference it a lot, but On3, one of the new fan kind of websites, has a On3 NIL 300 where it ranks all of those athletes. And you mentioned how some of the elite get to where they are in creating that revenue space for themselves. Alabama has Bryce Young and John Metchie and Will Anderson on there as carryover from last year, all in the top 10 with Arch Manning, a prospect that they hope to sign, who's at the top of the list. So definitely as far as these guys creating value for themselves, that's an argument that I want to get into as well a little bit later in the conversation of these athletes, how they created value for themselves in high school. But before that, with the NIL collectives, now that Alabama does have High Tide traditions, what differences can fans expect to be able to see? Because last year, in trying to cover all of these deals, it was nearly impossible for us at Tide 100.9 to write something on all of these deals because there wasn't a lot of information on them. Is that something that can change with something like High Tide Traditions to allow more access and understanding to what these sponsorship deals are for our athletes?
That's a question, and that'll be tough to really see because oftentimes when it comes to name, image, and likeness deals, they are endorsement deals, marketing deals, but they're at their core, they're a contract between a student athlete and a third party. And when you have that contract from a confidentiality perspective, there's no requirement to make that information easily accessible and available. Now, through a collective, however, you can have much more broad oversight over the types of deals, the number of deals, the value of deals, if that collective decides to share that information. I'll tell you, all collectives are created differently. As they have been created, you know, really over the last 9-10 months, they are all different in how they engage. And just like you said earlier about how quickly the pace of change is happening right now in name, image, and likeness, collectives, even though they're being established, are constantly evolving and growing in terms of how they're doing the work that they're doing. So I think that there will probably be more like some of this information that we're going to be able to get. We'll just have to wait and see.
Another thing that was kind of brought up by Saban himself when he mentioned that was, you know, we as a program give all of the players, walk-ons included, the same kind of medical treatment, the same dietary supplement, you know, everybody's kind of treated equally in that space. And one of the big concerns, which I find very ironic here in the state of Alabama, is the lack of fairness within NIL. You know, the idea that the quarterback is going to make way more money than his offensive line. His offensive line might not want to block for him. We've chased that rabbit down a hole and had him for dinner already, as far as I'm concerned on this show. But when it comes down to that, is that kind of one of the pursuits of many collectives, is to allow for a tad bit more fairness in this? You're not leaving the players simply to their own devices?
I think the fairness that we have is that NIL is open to anyone, right? So yes. Then the question is, well, how do other athletes just, you know, be able to profit off of NIL or just even find opportunities? And I do think that that's where collectives can come into play, because collectives are focused on a singular institution and they are focused on bringing name, image, and likeness opportunities and dollars to student athletes. We're going to see student athletes be able to engage in NIL possibly when they might not have been able to do it directly themselves. Obviously, your star players, your star athletes, and not just your star athletes, but your athletes who happen to have a significant social media following. And they may not be the star athlete, but they just happen to have a lot of followers on social media. They're going to have deals that will be presented to them and that will come to them. But when a student athlete that maybe isn't an elite athlete, maybe doesn't have the biggest following on social media, but still wants to engage in name, image, and likeness, the collective could be an opportunity for them to experience opportunities that they wouldn't have but for the collective.
And those were some of the cooler aspects we got to see in July of last year, where you know, musicians and social media activists and so many things beyond the scope of what your talent could bring you. It was the proof in the way that these athletes were able to create value for themselves with more than just what they did on the field, on the court, or on the pitch. We're talking with Luke Fedlam, a NIL expert, non-agent sports attorney, president of the Anomaly Sports Group, partner and chair of the sports law practice at Porter Wright Law Firm. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Luke Fedlam, F-E-D-L-A-M. And in mentioning the kind of social media aspect of it, the activism aspect of it, and kind of looking back over the last calendar year, is the impact that NIL had on women in sports. And we see it here at Alabama. We have one of, arguably, I think I'm very biased in this, but one of the best softball pitchers in the world, Montana Fouts. And anytime that we write about Montana on our websites or talk about her, it explodes. And it's not just because of her talent. It's because of a lot of the things that she does through NIL to give back to the community. And people want to buy her merch. And a lot of the early success stories we saw of NIL were about female athletes. Is that a trend that has continued over these past 8 or 9 months?
That is a trend that we're seeing for sure. And, you know, there are a lot of women athletes that are able to engage in name, image, and likeness that are celebrities because of their sport and their athletic ability, also because of their social media. We've seen that oftentimes, generally speaking, women student athletes at the college level are more engaged with their social media following. And so therefore the impressions are higher, the value of their social media is higher. So from that perspective, we're seeing a lot. We're going to continue to see that across sports. And I just, you know, just the news over the last 24 hours with the Cavender twins, you know, Haley and Hannah Cavender on the basketball side, just transferring to Miami to play basketball. It's going to be interesting to see. Again, they were one of the, you know, first people out, or the two of the first people out in social media on name, image, and likeness last July 1st. So, yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of women student athletes who are able to engage and earn compensation. And it's, that's what makes NIL interesting, is that it is an equal opportunity for anyone who's a student athlete at the college level to be able to earn compensation.
That very easily wraps into the next question, is the transfer portal. And obviously, you know, there's, you either love both or you kind of hate both. And for much of our listening audience, it's very much a struggle to, because we see so many positives with the way that Montana uses her NIL, and we see some negatives too with the transfer portal. How closely are the two subjects married? Because the NCAA has a little bit more of a stronghold over the transfer portal. There's more rules that make some sense, such as the upcoming deadline to transfer and play within the next season. But also, you can't allow for tampering and the upheaval of talent. How closely are those two subjects in college sports really married, NIL and the transfer portal?
At the highest levels, in terms of the elite athletes that enter the transfer portal, they're very closely married. I mean, we have to be honest about that now, because of the transfer portal, a student athlete, you know, it's not just about the recruiting of the student athlete, but it's also about the retention of the student athlete. And so schools are thinking about, what are we doing to make sure that our top talent stays here and doesn't enter the transfer portal? So when you think about name, image, and likeness, it's just like any other asset that a school has. Whether you look at the assets of being, you know, a coaching staff, the facilities that they have, the tradition, the conference that they're in, the academics, all of those are assets that a school will use to recruit and retain talent. Name, image, and likeness is now just another one of those assets. What is the school doing? How are they engaging with the local business community around name, image, and likeness? Is there a collective that happens to be affiliated, obviously not legally affiliated, but at least affiliated in some respects with that institution? All of these things are assets that absolutely play a role when we start to think about student-athletes entering the transfer portal and potentially transferring.
And that really speaks to the value of what the players have created for themselves. And that leads back to the question I had mentioned before. Throughout the week, I've spent quite a bit of time talking about NIL and going on a few rants of myself, of my own. And one that kind of sparked some was a quote that I saw from the Athletic's article earlier in the week about NIL and the arms race that exists. And, you know, they accompanied that article with a graphic through Twitter of a Power 5 head coach being quoted as saying, "You're really guessing that this 18-year-old guy who has proven zero is worth $1 million from somebody. What the expletive are we talking about?" And I take a big big, big issue with that quote, because haven't, even if these players can't earn for themselves in high school, aren't they creating a exponential amount of value for themselves through what they do in high school just to be recruited in the first place? And why it's so simple to look at an athlete like Arch Manning and expect him to be making a lot of money through NIL as soon as he signs his letter of intent?
That's exactly right. I mean, that's literally exactly what it is. You can't tell me that someone hasn't proven themselves if schools are spending all of the money that they're spending to recruit that player. There's clearly value there. There's clearly opportunity there. There are a lot of ways in which we will place value on potential. We do that regularly. Schools do that during their recruiting process. Professional teams do that during their draft analysis process. Now, granted, there's more of a body of work to look at when making those bets, but we do that at the college level all the time. So to try to, you know, articulate that they're not proven and therefore they shouldn't be making this money, that just doesn't make any sense. Athletes have value. That value comes from their existing performance that they've done, which has caused teams to want to recruit them. Athletes have value at the high school level as they develop their social media following and brand presence. So because of that, we know that the college sports is a big business and it's a big money business. That's why schools spend so much money in their recruiting. And they do that because these young athletes have value, they have talent, and I think that's where we're starting to see where name, image, and likeness is. It does make sense because there is value ultimately to a brand or company as they align with certain student athletes.
No doubt. And there's obviously there's risk involved for those brands. There's risks involved for those players. But I can't help but also think at the same time that if you're talking about a high school athlete coming to the college level and trying to say they've proven zero, you can easily compare that to the academic side as well, where intelligent students are given the opportunity to work within certain programs, work within certain businesses, and also get the scholarship money that they earn as well. And I think that's the biggest thing that often gets overlooked. It's not a handout. It's earned by all of these athletes. One of the things that we get harped on a lot, and especially one of my regular guests, who's a good friend of mine, we try to look ahead for the future of NIL. Even those of us that support NIL know that probably in its current state, it's not viable. We are easily agreed upon with Nick Saban on that matter. What are the things in NIL that still need to be fixed? What's the future of it? And how much of a role can the NCAA really expect to play in that future?
So when we think about kind of where things are going, the biggest question, I think, in terms of what needs to be changed and fixed, one of the issues that comes up a lot is the international student-athlete aspect. So international student-athletes who are in the United States on an F-1 visa aren't able to participate in name, image, and likeness. So we know that there's some work that needs to be done from that perspective. That can only be done by Congress, though. That's not something that a state can control or something that a school or institution can control. We also have to look at, more broadly speaking, as we look at where things are going, the interesting thing is that right now, with no national standard, I think that's a good thing. I think that we've been into, 10 months, 9 months of name, image, and likeness. A lot has changed. As we talked about earlier, the pace of change is fast right now, but there is a lot of opportunity for us to continue to learn and grow and see how student athletes are benefiting and engaging and seeing how schools and institutions are using it. So I think that's a good thing, because you are correct. The NCAA is really not going to be able to restrict name, image, and likeness and put up guardrails like they might have been able to had they passed this years ago. But now, because of the NCAA versus Alston Supreme Court case last summer, it was very clear when the NCAA lost unanimously at the Supreme Court, where the court ultimately said that you cannot restrict student athletes when it comes to compensation and benefits. So from that perspective, there's not going to be a situation where a few years from now, we're going to just all of a sudden have a cap on the amount that a student athlete can earn. There could be some guardrails that get put into place that may somewhat limit a student athlete's engagement in name, image, and likeness, but it's not going to be based on the amount that they can earn. So So ultimately, I think we're in a place where we're going to continue to see how this plays out in the coming years. Congress may get involved, but at the same time, the issues that Congress is going to be dealing with when it comes to name, image, and likeness could get very divisive. There are some significant challenges when we look at even right now, one of the bigger issues that's coming up with student athletes is should they be categorized or classified as employees? And that's a big discussion that's being handled with the National Labor Relations Board. There are some federal courts that are dealing with it right now. And then there's also a couple states that are talking about it through their legislative process. So these are all some significant issues that we're going to have to see how they play out in the coming years.
Off that last point, what worries so many people that love the traditions of college football and even our dear coach Gene Stallings is the idea of amateurism. Is NIL really stepping on amateurism to the point where this is professionalism? In my mind, and I don't mean to lead you, but in my mind, this has always been a professional sport. We were just illegally using the abilities of these athletes. Anybody that turns on the TV and watches or supports by buying products and all that sort of stuff adds to the professionalism of it. But how much of an impact does NIL have in kind of that new transition evolution of college sports where it's not so much of an amateurism aspect anymore?
Well, listen, Jacob, you're right. At the end of the day, we've got a situation where, you know, Turner pays $1 billion for 3 weeks of college basketball in March. I mean, college sports have been professional for a long time. There is an incredible amount of money, and student athletes haven't been able to participate in that. And what we're looking at right now is not even just the idea of student athletes getting paid by the institutions, but rather partnering with a third party, an independent third party, for providing the license to their name, image, and likeness. And that's what NIL is. So this idea of the fact that amateurism is lost now because a student athlete can go earn compensation, it to me, it's just a bit too far. You made the analogy with regular students, right? Non-athlete students and the academic side of things. You could make that same argument here where you're talking about now we have, if you have somebody that gets a scholarship because they're a great, you know, cello player, and all of a sudden does that ruin, you know, music because now that cello player has been able to go out and earn compensation for themselves, right? I mean, there are so many different ways that we could look at this that ultimately amateurism is a concept that really doesn't have a lot of weight in the sense that name, image, and likeness does not step on the toes of amateurism. Amateurism at the college level is student athletes earning an academic degree while playing sports or being able to study while playing sports. And now, yes, they can earn money through name, image, and likeness with third parties.
There's so many other questions and I don't have the time for it. Lord, there's so much there, so much more to unpack, but we do have to cut it off there. Luke, tell us what you do on a daily basis to help athletes and anything else that you need to promote. We thank you for your time. Absolutely. The floor is yours.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. As you said earlier, you can find me on social media at Luke Fedlam. I focus every day on educating folks. We work with colleges and universities all across the country, educating their athletes, their coaches, their staff. We talk at the high school and at the pro level with teams in terms of their development and education. So, absolutely. I have a podcast called Protecting Your Possibilities Podcast. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. I appreciate the time, and I hope I can come back and have more conversation with you.
Absolutely. Hey, June and July are tough times around here. I'm sure we'll circle back to the NIL conversation. We greatly appreciate it, Luke, and I hope you have a great weekend, my friend.
Thanks. You too, Jacob. Take care.
Absolutely. Luke Fedlam there helping us out. What a great conversation there. If you're against NIL, I hope you learned something. If you love NIL, I hope you learned something as well, because good Lord, there was a lot there. And there was even more, you know, the next things that I wanted to ask about just wasn't the time there. But a great conversation there. Glad we were able to have it.
My caretaker was very rough with me. I thought they did it because I wasn't moving fast enough.
Elder abuse is a crime, and together we can stop it. If you or someone you know has been abused, neglected, or exploited, call the Adult Abuse Hotline at 1-800-458-7214. That's 1-800-458-7214. Sponsored by the Alabama Department of Human Resources, the Department of Justice, ADECA Grant Number 18-VA-VS-050, the ABA, and this...
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly cloudy this afternoon and tonight with scattered to numerous showers and thunderstorms around. The high today 80, tonight's low 64. Tomorrow and Wednesday, mostly cloudy both days with occasional showers and thunderstorms. Highs between 79 and 82. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 80 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Thank you for listening to